appointed by Bill Clinton, and he's got some ideas that are really important for the middle class. He believes in middle out economics, and he shows in this film that top down, trickle down economics don't work, mm-hmm. because once you have a certain amount of money, you don't trickle that down into the economy. You put it in a vault, and now you don't even put it in a vault in America. You put it in a vault somewhere where you're getting the best tax protection and the best tax shelters, and you never bring it back. And he exposes that in this film.
Yep.
And the other one I already mentioned was Citizen Coke. Go watch both these movies, and I think it's going to motivate you as much as it motivates me.
Yeah, and get involved in something like 15 Now, PDX, or whatever you are, you know, around the country. Start fighting for something like that, like a big win for the labor movement.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been our half hour of Labor Radio. Have a lovely evening.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Muertos Northwest's 6th annual celebration under the bridge on Dia de los Muertos, Saturday, November 1st at 1 p.m. This year's celebration will include the creation of altars, sugar skull decorating, Muertos face painting for all ages, Muertos storytelling, and live music by Los Tex-Maniacs. Again, that's Muertos Northwest 6th Annual Celebration Under the Bridge, Saturday, November 1st, from 1 p.m. to midnight at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland performance of Carla Lara, Thursday, October 23rd, from 7 to 10 p.m. Carla Lara, Honduran jazz singer, songwriter, and political activist, will be performing at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. She is a working artist, journalist, and feminist, in a country where resistance in her artistic life has always been tied to political life in Central America. That's Carla Lara, Thursday, October 23rd, from 7 to 10 p.m. at Tabor Space in Portland. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli, and this evening we are featuring another special guest and also another very special topic that gets highly overlooked in activist circles in general in the struggle for social and environmental justice, which is talking about good allyship. And as we talk about all kinds of different prison-related issues on this program, then we find it pertinent that we cover these kind of connected issues as well. And so our special guest this evening is Mr. Ashanti Omawale Alston. Ashanti, how you doing tonight? Ashanti is a former political prisoner with related activity with the Black Liberation Army, which was an underground tier of the Black Panther Party. He also is an organizer with the Jericho Movement for Political Prisoner Amnesty, supporting many of his comrades who, many of these people he knew before they were actually locked up inside, and many of them are still in prison, serving time as political prisoners and prisoners of war as well. So another organization that Ashanti has worked with is Critical Resistance, the Northwest regional, the Northeast regional organizer for Critical Resistance as well. So Ashanti, are you with us now?
Yes, I am. How you doing?
Hey, I'm pretty good, man. How you been?
Oh, fine.
Right on, right on. So I just gave you kind of a brief introduction, but aside from just mentioning that you're a former political prisoner, and some of the organizations that you've worked with, such as Jericho Movement and Critical Resistance, can you explain a little bit more about your background, how you got involved in, I mean, all of this work from, you know, way back when up until now?
Yeah, as brief as I can. I'm a product of the 60s, so I come out of that that period of the 60s that many of us consider a very revolutionary period. And the level of activity in the black community was very strong. There was a civil rights movement, but there was also a growing, stronger black power and a black revolutionary movement. And out of that came the Black Panther Party. And me and my best friend, who's now the chair of Jericho, Jihad Mohammed, we joined the Black Panther Party as teenagers. We were definitely influenced by Stokely Carmichael, H. Red Brown, and all the others, because we saw that in this historical oppression of black people in this country, from being kidnapped from Africa and the plantations here on through Jim Crow and present-day prison industrial complex, you know, like, we needed a liberation struggle that had a very revolutionary character, that it saw the need to destroy, to disrupt, at the least, you know, the American empire, as far as it had a hold on us and all these other people who we discovered was oppressed like us. So young teenagers, we joined. We were also part of a frame-up. They tried to frame us for a cop killing. Still in high school, senior years, it wasn't for the fact that we could get some good lawyers, we would probably have been convicted and sent away. But we were able to get out. And eventually went into the ranks, both of us at different times, to the Black Liberation Army. I ended up serving about 11 and a half, 12 so years. Jihad ended up doing pretty much 24 years. But coming out, even when I came out, I joined others like Safi Bukhari and working for political prisoners in the different formations. But the one that I ended up joining was the Jericho, the National Jericho Movement, with Safi Bukhari, Jalil Muntakim, who's one of the longest-held political prisoners in upstate New York, and Herman Ferguson, who just joined the Ancestors recently. They formed the National Jericho Movement. Eventually, I became a member of that, and for at least the last, I guess, maybe 10 years, you know, I've been working more directly under the auspices of the National Jericho Movement.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the work that you do, and we will get back to talking about political prisoners and specifically Asada Shakur, because there is the International Day of Solidarity with Asada Shakur and all political prisoners on November 2nd. And Portland will be having an event, which is at the Center for Intercultural Organizing, again, Sunday, November 2nd. And we'll get back into that topic. But Ashanti, definitely want to cover this very broad topic of talking about allyship, and also because some of the work that you've done as well is working within AIPOC organizing or politics, which for our listeners, the acronym AIPOC, APOC, stands for Anarchist People of Color, and again a loose network of people who, you know, generally identify as POC, right? But secondly, you know, have certain politics about, you know, how do we talk about prison? How do we talk about dismantling it? And things like that that are unique, and how that relates to kind of basically making a response to maybe lack of or bad specifically white allyship. So can you talk more about that and how those things developed over years?
Okay, well, you know, like just jumping real quickly back into the prison, you know, prison experience, you know, I began to open up to a lot of anarchist ideas and analysis and stuff and began to move closer to them. And by the time I got out, I was calling myself an anarchist. And one of the reasons that, you know, I began to identify with anarchism was because of many of the errors that we had made in the revolutionary nationalist movement at coming out of the black community. You know, the hierarchy, the critiques of capitalism or authority that just didn't go deep enough, and not having ideas of alternative ways to struggle, alternative ways to relate to each other within our struggle organizations, you know. So coming out, having an organization like Love and Rage at the time, being able to give me a lot of deeper understandings, and they also was trying to develop really principled relationships with people of color, I began to see that, you know, it was possible to be able to relate to white, potential white allies and not have to feel like they want me to deny who I am or who my people are or the specifics of the oppression of African people in this country, you know. So that was really important. And not like it was easy, not like it wasn't a struggle, but there were those individuals within Love and Rage who were very open to exploring just what it meant to be in solidarity, mm-hmm. you know, with folks of color, in solidarity sometimes specifically with black folks or folks of African descent in ways that they would not try to take over or impose their own thinkings on us, that they would respect, you know, the fact that we could govern our own struggles, and that if we're fighting for our own self-determination, surely we can determine what kinds of organizations, what kinds of analysis should guide what we do. And I began to see that not only within Love and Rage, but then eventually the Anarchist Black Cross Federation and other formations like that came about that was working specifically around political prisoners. And even then, you know, like they may well have sent anarchist literature inside, but they would always ask the prisoners, even in terms of raising consciousness, you know, ask them what kind of literature are they looking for, you know. And if they were open to reading anarchist literature, then the ABCs, you know, the Book to Prisoner programs would try to make those things available. And that was a much better way for me to see myself working with, say, white allies who were not doing the missionary approach, who were not treating us like, well, you know, you just got to, you know, open them up to some things and then they'll come around. You know, they were really giving us a feeling that they respected the fact that we had brains too, and mm-hmm. the fact mm-hmm. that we were the ones on the bottom taking most of the hits from the empire, you know, that we should be the one in the lead of our own struggles and how those struggles connected to other struggles in this country or in this empire and around the world. And now that's a lot, but mm-hmm. it really gave me my first practical insight beyond the theoretical on how folks from other nationalities, basically white folks, was trying to be more principled in their relationship with folks of color. Mm-hmm.
That's great. You just mentioned a few, you know, key kind of factors, things that have been, you know, useful in organizing as far as allyship is concerned. And you know, even broadly, there's even the experiences of people who, you know, haven't spent time in prison or don't have family members and all the kind of different privileges involved in, you know, everyone's aspects of their identity, whether it might be something like citizenship over being undocumented or what have you. And so, I mean, looking at the whole ball of wax as far as the work that you kind of that you specifically do around not just freeing political prisoners, but this idea of prison abolition. Can you talk more about, you know, what that means and maybe highlight some more of the kind of things that you're talking about that are, good signs of allyship as far as doing, you know, the work that needs to be done around this.
Right. Well, you know, like even you had mentioned, I mean, I guess we both have talked about prison industrial complex and then abolition. And even those two terms, you know, like for me, one, the prison industrial complex was the first term I came into that was beginning to give me a deeper analysis of the role of prisons mm-hmm. Inside and beyond the physical structures. And then to meet other people who were talking about abolition, you know, and abolition, especially coming from an anarchist perspective, was talking about not only like getting rid of the prison industrial complex, but getting rid of prisons and the whole idea. When I saw myself deepening my own analysis, then I'm also, you know, looking at my allies differently as well, because those who seem to be stuck into just prison industrial complex, I want to get rid of that. I want them to stop treating people so bad in a much more reformist perspective, then I could see different limitations coming from those allies versus those who was understanding abolition, you know. And it's because if they understood abolition, then they know this isn't about just trying to improve the prison industrial complex or reduce the populations or to find some other ways of surveilling or controlling people's behavior, that they're thinking more in radical revolutionary terms, like going to the roots of things. And when you do that, I mean, you got to start looking at the people you're working with differently, too, and seeing where are their interests, where are their understandings maybe first, and then where are their interests, you know, where are they coming from? Are they part of the nonprofit industrial complex? Are they mm-hmm. part of something mm-hmm. that gets funding from, you know, one of them billionaires? So how far will they go for you? And when I'm saying for you in the sense of for me, because coming out of prison, I'm still part of this bottom society of black people mm-hmm. who are going, not only going to prisons, but are getting killed in the street, getting terrorized in the street, getting harassed, have no jobs. There's HIV, AIDS epidemic. There's all kind of things that are happening that is continuing to tear our family structures and our social structures apart. And you're looking for allies to understand it, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you start to doing that, you notice that some of those allies who were with you at a certain phase, they're not quite there anymore because they don't want to lose their positions. They don't want to lose their fundings. Or they don't want to challenge their own internalized racism, you know. So, I mean, it was important for me, like working with folks. There's a group in Brooklyn, Resistance in Brooklyn, R&B, who have been anti-racist activists for years. And had been very principled and continue to this day to be very principled in the ways that they relate to struggles around black self-determination, Native American sovereignty, Puerto Rican independence, and such, you know? And they put themselves out there. They put their resources out there, but they are constantly developing their own understanding of all of these oppressions and how they kind of act and react on people, and they're open to the kinds of struggles with folks of color to continually broaden and deepen their understandings of their own racism, knowing that it's a lifetime struggle, you know, and that's very important. And so that was like one of the groups. The Love and Rage, man, it doesn't exist anymore, but there was individuals out of there who was taking such a principled stand in relationship to folks of color that it caused conflict within Love and Rage, because it was a predominantly white organization, but its effort to struggle around its own internal racism strengthened some factors within there and made others leave. Mm-hmm. I watched those who left. I watched those who stayed the course, even if they went to other formations. The ones that stayed the course, you know, there's a consistency in how they try to relate to others' oppression that is not directly their own. you know, and that's a challenge, you know, and it takes courage. And it's more that I'm, you know, I'm constantly trying to understand it more and more every day. And I know that's I know it's a lot. I you know, one example I'll give you, like, around APOC. First APOC, you know, was anarchist people of color. And then those of us in certain areas like New York and others, we didn't want to just identify as APOC. We wanted to say, well, A could stand for anti-authoritarian, you know, it, so that we so that people didn't necessarily have to get caught up into a the name anarchist, you know. But the point of that also was that there was others who were coming involved with the struggles that wanted to get away from hierarchy because of how they saw hierarchy was tied so much into white supremacy and heterosexism and all these other things, and they wanted to deepen their own activism and to look at how that meant they had to challenge their relationship with folks who come from different communities. You know, so it's a constant struggle, and it's a struggle that, you know, people kind of shy away from because it's not material in that sense. It's emotional. It's psychological. It's even spiritual, and it's those things that we shy away from. So, I mean, it's like where we're at right now, you know, it's like there's a lot of struggles going on. There's a lot of people coming to the fore, but you watch and you're looking. And you want people to be open and learn to be okay with the, what may go on inside their own bodies when they confront racism, when they confront white supremacy, when they confront classism, when they confront heterosexism, ageism, and all these other things. But it all comes down to how do we treat each other. Even the stuff I read in liberation theology now, you know, the whole thing, like even when Jesus and all them was doing their stuff, which I come to see as quite revolutionary, Jesus' whole thing was, don't tell me what you believe. Don't tell me that you done paid your stuff in church. I want to see how you treat each other and treat all these people who need you. That will tell me more about you than what comes out of your mouth, you know. So even today, you know, I look more for that. You know, rather than maybe what people will write, there may be great writings on it, but I'm not that concerned about the writings. What are you doing? What are you challenging yourself to do with others in the everyday?
For those of you just tuning in, we're here on the Prison Pipeline, KBOO Portland, with Mr. Ashanti Omawale Alston, who's an organizer with the Jericho Movement for Political Prisoner Amnesty and former Northeast Regional Coordinator for Critical Resistance. And Ashanti, you just mentioned, you know, you're not super concerned as much as, what are people writing or what have you. And I'm going to just maybe mention one writing that's fairly recent that many might argue, including yourself, is somewhat tied to the kind of academic and or nonprofit industrial complex, that book being The New Jim Crow. And, you know, so again, it's not about, you know, for us to maybe analyze the book, but wanted to, I thought that might be a good example for you to maybe dissect some aspect of, you know, where is the allyship or not in that kind of work? Again, not necessarily just your appraisal of academic literature per se, but somebody who has a different perspective like you on prison abolition versus kind of what the book is basically just saying is that there's problems perhaps with the prison system, or that's maybe from a reformist notion. So can you relate that maybe to some of those issues?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that book, Michelle Alexander. I'm going to just tell you honestly, the person who you want to talk about that book is my wife. Vivian Salihana. She's a professor at UMass Dartmouth, Criminology and Social Justice. Underline social justice, but she does a really strong critique of Michelle Alexander's book. One of the things we got to acknowledge is that her book is very popular, so on a certain level, it has raised many people's awareness of this issue, prison industrial complex and all this other stuff, but still fails to go deeper into this empire and how this empire came about, and what helped it to come about is still a constant factor in everything it does. So we're talking about the white supremacy. A book doesn't go as far, so it becomes, you know, a reformist approach, you know. And so people who pick up on that will be people who are not really pushing for a radical solution. Because if it's radical, you're going to talk about getting rid of the empire. You're going to talk about getting rid of the American way that has been built on the back of Turtle Island, mm-hmm. you know, and that every time we don't take that into consideration and what this empire has done to the people who were here, to those of us who are in Africa, to the Mexicans, to the Japanese, to the Chinese, to all these other groups that have come here and suffered, then you are trying to figure out how to save the American way. And so Michelle Alexander, I think she's a former prosecutor and stuff like that, she's really liberal. Mm-hmm. But it opens up many doors for people. But I think it's on us after that who have a deeper understanding to engage in that kind of struggle to push forward more radical analysis or perspective, and then be able to kind of back it up maybe with some kind of practices that show that it's not just about reaching out to some politician or changing some policy, that power is really with people, and especially those people most impacted by mm-hmm. this monster. And it cannot be limited to just the PIC, prison industrial complex.
Right.
So for mm-hmm. me, you know, I also find useful... his name is Loic Wakwant. He's a French sociologist here. But his analysis of this same prison thing is even much more radical than Michelle's, and I believe even Angela Davis, because he hits on the centrality of racism. He hits on how that is the constant factor in any issue dealing with prison, especially as it relates to African people in this country.
Well, Ashanti, you know, we're running out of time. We got to get you back on here soon, because this is a conversation, I think, you know, this needs to just be a constant conversation anyways. Perhaps we can get Vivian on, too, to talk about that particular analysis of the book, too, and, you know, how she sees things different, because she's really done some rigorous work around that I'm also familiar with. Before we wrap up, and again, we will continue this conversation on other programs, but again, we just wanted to address, you know, as far as talking about good allyship, you know, is somebody like Asada Shakur and the kind of solidarity and allyship that people have shown of and for her over the years, including the fact that Jericho has now called for this, you know, National Day of Solidarity. It started last year, and now this is the second one. It'll be this tradition. So can you talk just a little bit about that? Why is Asada so important, as well as supporting this National Day of Solidarity with her?
Right. Asada, just as quick as I can, Asada Shakur becomes very important because as someone out of the Black Panther Party, with so many people in the Black community, I guess maybe my generation now, still remember and remember the things that we tried to do, when they heard about what happened to Asada, many people was like reading through what the media was saying as far as her being a criminal, cop killer, and all this other stuff. She became a symbol, probably the closest woman resistance symbol since Harriet Tubman,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
And then she's directly related to the Black Liberation Army, and probably the last great act of the Black Liberation Army was the liberation of Asada Shakur from the New Jersey women's prison, and to be able to successfully get her out of there, out of the country, and presently still living in Cuba under the protection of the Cuban government. And that's very significant. There's a whole history about it. But we're hoping that Asada, who still has a lot of resonance in Black communities and other communities, we can rally folks around her and the political prisoners, you know, so those in exile, her, Nahanda, Guillermo Morales, and all the political prisoners, like from Sundiata Okoli, who
mm-hmm.
just had an important decision about being released, but they're holding him up. So Kamal Siddiqui, all of these political prisoners, we're trying to tell people, please embrace this issue of the freedom of political prisoners, because it is central, you know, to what we all are fighting for in terms of trying to change this world. They are, like Yuri Kochiyama often said, they are the heartbeat of our struggles.
Right.
But we need to come behind them.
Yeah. And for our listeners here in Portland, the Portland event will take place on Sunday, November 2nd. Again, it's here in Portland at the Center for Intercultural Organizing. It's 707 North Killingsworth Street, Portland. Again, that's Center for Intercultural Organizing, 707 North Killingsworth Street. And again, that is Sunday, November 2nd from 7 to 9 p.m. It's a free event, and we hope everybody can make it. It's a KBOO sponsored event as well. We'll have Walida and Marisha, Ajamu Umi, our own Mike Crenshaw from the station will be there, as well as Black Butterfly and many, many more. Ashanti, I wish you could make the event, but I know you're a little far away right now.
I am, but y'all are doing great right work out there. And so, you know, power to, you know, the Portland Jericho and all these folks that have been doing great work out there. Right on. Right.
Thanks, Ashanti. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at KBOO.fm/Prison Pipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. And I want to thank my guest, Mr. Ashanti Amawali Alston. Again, thanks so much, Ashanti. And we hope to hear from you soon. And also for our listeners to look at some of his writings, which he's also an excellent writer. Many of those things are up online as well. We also want to thank our lovely engineer, Danielle Parks. We wish you a good evening. Free them all. Free all political prisoners and prisoners of war. Have a great night. We'll see you next week.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes